Fantastic.
So the last game that we played together was the 13th of December, because that was when we played Rhino Hero and the Jabba's Palace, because that was on the gift-giving episode,
well,
so 13th.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 different games.
I beat you. I got 24.
Ah.
Yeah, different games.
Yeah, those
that, when I started cracking that's all, insane.
Those are all different games. And I've also gotten Damo now onto BG stats, because when we were playing Bus, he's like, well, you know what we were talking about?
Yeah, I'm going
to
start.
It's just, I just said to him, I just go, it's just simple to do once it's all set up. And then you just like, you can look back and go, oh, I played that. And then it's like, and then he sent me a message 2 days later going, God damn it. just screenshot of his BG stats, and I'm like, I don't apologize for that. That's good.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it, eh? All right. Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Board Game Gateway Podcast, episode number 22, episode 1 of season 2, if you will, I guess. This is our, we're returning. We got re-upped. We're back for a second season. We made it through season 1.
We definitely not picked up my Netflix.
No. Or HBO, for that matter. If this is the first time listening to the Board Game Gateway, this is your entryway into the world of board games, tabletop games, and good times. You guys did that in sync right there. If you watch the video, you just like looked to the right and like scratched your head like
we did.
Swimming
we're
there.
In
that's
sync.
Fantastic.
We're talking about The Last of Us now.
That's great. My name is Nibra. I'm your host, and I am joined today by two lovely gentlemen. On my left, I have Mr. Ralph.
Hi, everyone.
And on my right, I have Mr. Blake.
Hello, good to be back.
Oh, he's back.
It's lovely
back.
To hear it. I love to hear it.
Matt's not here to steal it this
exactly
week.
That's
right.
True. Enjoy.
Speaking of Matt, Matt is not joining us ever again.
Yeah, we kicked him out. Or rather, he kicked himself out, didn't he? No.
Yeah. That's right. No, he's not joining us tonight. He has. He will be joining us for more episodes. He's not gone anywhere permanently. He has, however, been given, he's accepted the role of Max Bialystock in The Producers in a local amateur theatre production.
Yeah.
So he's now got rehearsals twice a week and it happens to incite with recording night. And he said, go on without me. You will be a better podcast without me. And we said, we know, Matt. We know.
And all of a sudden, we lost half our fan base.
Exactly right.
Everyone's just tuned out already.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Anyway, but look, if this is the first time you're joining us, we are going to be going through our a recap of our Christmas break. We've been away for about since the 13th of December was when we last recorded, and it is now the 25th of January. So we've taken a good month and a half off. Ralph and I have played a lot of games. Blake has played quite a few as well. Blake, not as so much as us, I don't think. But Ralph has played the most amount of new games. He liked to play. How many did you? I had 19, and how many did you have, Ralph?
I think about 24.
You think about 24?
I've got to count it because I haven't numbered them or anything.
Exactly 24, he thinks.
I need to just count the list, Nate.
Exactly right. But tonight, we're not going to go through all those games. We're going to take you through just a couple of the games that we've played that we actually wanted to talk about. Blake, the game that you want to talk about tonight will be?
Bus.
A very interesting game. I would like to have a quick chat about Heat, Pedal to the Metal, and Ready, Set, Bet. Some quick ones. And Ralph?
A game I got over the Christmas break, Kites.
And Kites is also going to be our gateway game of the week.
I do want to say though, to end our season last year, we did a gift exchange and you guys got me Mafia to Cuba, which was a very thoughtful gift, and we played that over Christmas and New Year's and Boxing Day at the beach. And
at the beach.
We're just sitting on the grassy area, and everyone was passing this box around, shaking it, and it was an absolute hit, you know, a bunch of Europeans just yelling at each other in the sun and everyone's like, this is normal,
I just need, dude, like, if one of you just had a cigar, it would have just been absolutely...
It would have been. We did have the hats, though. But yeah, that was a huge hit in the family group, so...
That's great. Yeah, look, I haven't had a chance really to play much more Jabba's Palace for the Love Letter game, but that is now, I think, my de facto Love Letter game that I'll be whipping out at any point in time. Mm. I really enjoyed that, so
nice.
Looking forward to that. All right, but let's get into the meat of tonight's podcast. Let's start chatting about some games that had an effect on us. We're going to start with Blake tonight. We're going to start with Bus. Tell us about Bus, if you will, Blake.
I promise the listeners that this game is a lot more exciting than it sounds. Bus, you know. Oh, okay.
How do you spell that?
That's B-U. Spell how it sounds.
B silent M.
Euro.
So this game, I found quite interesting. It's quite an old game, isn't it? It
came out in, I want to say 99.
99.
So 15 years. No, 25 years now. No, my math's no good tonight.
It's been around for quite a while, but, we went over to a mate Damien's place and he was kind enough to show it to us, and I found this game fantastic. So basically the premise of the game is you run a bus route. So you're trying to ferry people between three different places. So from either the pub, their home, or to work. And that's basically the game. So you're trying to build a bus route around where people are and trying to get them to where they're going to. And this works with the three different times of day. So different times of day, they want to go to different places, and you've got to try and work around that. Now, where this system gets juicy and interesting is there's one mechanic which doesn't fit with the theme of the game at all, but I don't care, I love it. It's called stopping time. So you take a time stone, you stop time, and it screws up anyone who's got a route planned to deliver people. It's a fairly, it's pretty much a worker placement game. You get to choose where you're going to, what actions you're going to take that turn. I won't go through all the actions, but basic things like, you know, building up how many buses you can have.
Putting more people on the board.
Yep, that sort of thing. So this game just fascinated me from the start. It was just the stopping time.
So how's this game work? Do you actually place little, like, they kind of look like Catan roads that you place on the map?
Yeah. So you're
matching. So that's your route.
You're building your routes.
And what does stopping time do?
So if, say, the time of day is already on work, if you stop, it stays on work. So anyone who'd already built their route around sending them to the pub at night, or have, you know, set up that way, it's going to stop their big turn. So if someone's planning for a big turn, they've built up their actions based around that turn.
Yep.
You can say, I'm going to stop time and try to mitigate that turn.
And do you get like points for delivering someone to the correct locations?
Yes, that's the way you get points. Every delivery is 1 point. The only caveat is if you do stop time, that's -1 point. So you've sort of got to... Now, the game ends one of two ways. Either two people run out of routes, I believe, or, you know, depending on the amount of players, one person's left with route sticks, or all of the time stones have been taken from the place. The game ends that round immediately, and in most points wins.
Yeah, so this is a designed by a designer group called Splotter, and they are known for making games that are absolutely brutal. And by brutality, what we are simply referring to is the idea that there is no catch-up mechanic. If you win one of these games, you have absolutely bested your opponents, and there's nothing they can do to say that, you know, it was rigged. Yeah. The great thing about Bus, so it's what some people refer to as one of the original worker placement games. So the game actually happens in two different phases. The first phase is the worker placement phase, where there are six different actions that you can do, as Blake said, you know, putting more people on the board, making a route, increasing how many stops your bus can actually go along that route. So you may only be able to deliver one person, but maybe you want to increase it. To even the final, and one of the most important actions other than the time stone, is who delivers first. Because there's only a limited amount of people on the board, and once they have been moved, that's it, right? Once they've been moved along their route, they're done for the day. And this game has a lot of future planning in it, because we know that this turn, so they're currently at home. So we know that the next stop they're going to want to go to is work. So you plan your whole turn and all of your actions around them going to work. And then someone decides to take the time stone action. Now, here's the thing about it, right? We said that you can stop time. You don't have to. It's just the threat that if you do stuff that I don't like you doing, I'm absolutely going to stop time. And therefore, you may have been planning for Joe Meeple going from his work, from his home to his work along your specific route. But now he just wants to stay home. And because he is home, he doesn't go anywhere. He's like, oh, I'm here. I'm going home. Oh, cool. I don't need to go anywhere. And that completely buggers you up. And this game has one of those moments in it where it's like, at its core, it is very much I'm moving the meeples onto my route and away from you. And then you may have to build your route to kind of intersect with mine so the guys can go to where I need them to go. But it very much is, if you don't have the people ready to go or your routes ready to go, you are sitting there literally going, oh, God. And then the moment that someone takes the time stone, you're literally like, oh, no. Because you're like, now, if he does take it, what am I going to do? You have, like, it literally is a brain burner of a game. And I absolutely adored it. Even though I adored this I was so far behind you and Damien. You two were just battling and I'm like, oh no, I know I'm out.
Because that's what makes that action so interesting, right? Because you put your little action square on the time stone action in the planning phase. And that immediately signals, okay, I'm gonna be stopping time. So maybe Ralph goes, okay, I'm not gonna take my big turn here. I'm just gonna put a couple of it because we all take turns planning our actions.
So one by one, you plan an action.
That's it. Okay. But once you've passed out, you can no longer place any more actions. So you might say, I'm going to take an easy turn.
Yeah.
Because Blake's planning around stopping time. I'm going to save my big turn for next go.
So you get more actions the following round.
No, sort of thing. I realize you made a faux pas. So the first way the game ends is not when you run out of matchsticks, routes. It's when you run out of action cubes. You only
so you have dedicated cubes. Yeah, I did hear about that. Yeah.
That's it. 20 actions throughout the entire of the game.
Sorry,
yeah.
No, that's okay. Because as soon as you realize, I went, oh, wait a minute. No, well, that doesn't sound right. No. And that's the thing, which is Blake just took a 5-cube turn. He's just used a quarter of his actions turn. Oh, my God, what's he planning?
Because I've heard this is a game you can lose on your first round because you could spend all 20 cubes, get far in the lead, and then just hope you can hold out.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely you can. And that's it was brilliant.
I've taken the time stone and, you know, Ralph decides I'm going to hold off my big turn and then he passes out of the action planning phase. I can just all of a sudden at the end, while we're taking those, I can start actually planning my big turn and then at the end say, you know what, I'm actually not going to stop time. And Ralph hasn't.
So the routes
invested in the turn.
The routes don't stay on the board.
They do.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. Okay, the people stay at their current
location. And then so they want to go work. So if I move all the people
away from your routes, you now have to either hope that I move them back towards where your route is, or you're going to have to move your, like, place your routes.
Yeah.
So the game is very Euro-y, right? And when we meant that, it's very much a, you play some actions to make other actions in the future stronger. Mm. You play various actions to make bus go vroom more, you know, like very Euro-y thing. But it's brilliant because when you look at the game board, it's very like Amsterdam-y, right? It looks very much
like Play School.
Oh, well, that version is the one that we played at Damien's house. It reminded me of like an Amsterdam sort of township, right?
Okay.
And then there just happens to be a time machine on the side of the board, right? It's just little like a wrist time machine.
I was like, oh, yes. Right?
Like, why?
I remember the time I jumped on the magic school bus.
Look, as stupid as it sounds to have that action there, it makes the game.
It makes it.
But they could have caught us something else. Like, little Johnny doesn't want to go to work today. Little Johnny wants to chuck a sickie.
It's not just little Johnny. It's all little Johnny's.
He doesn't want to go to school. He wants to go to the pub.
Well, that's the thing. Absolutely, right? As stupid as, but we also have to say this game played relatively quick for a really heavy, it's not even a heavy Euro. It's just got a lot of like,
it's a thinky game.
It's a very thinky game. It played in about an hour and 40.
There's not a lot. There's not
just after our teach.
What I like about a lot of the Splatter games is they give you all the tools. Do whatever you want. It's a bit of a sandbox. You're going to shoot yourself in the foot, but go run.
Yeah, there's the sandbox. And so Splatter, they've also made other games. There's one like Food Chain Magnate is another one. I think another one is called I think there's like cars and boats, or boats and cars, or something like that. There's a few other ones that I like.
It's like a caravan one as well.
Yes, yeah, like caravan and boats or something like that. I can't remember, but they're one of the ones I really want to try. But like, this was like you immediately were like, I could see your brain was like, I'm all in on this game.
I was straight in on it. I think when it properly clicked was when we handed out our 20 action cubes. You know, Damien said, this is all you get for the entire game. But that doesn't click straight away.
Yeah.
Until you start setting up your first turn, you go, okay, I'm going to build... It's my first turn. I've got to set up, so I'm going to build some routes. That's one. I'm going to, you know, try to maybe deliver on my first turn, and I'm going to put some people on the board and maybe...
Four actions. Bang.
And then four actions are out, and you're looking, and you go, oh, I only have 16 actions left for the entire game. Oh, okay. I've got to play it a little bit.
I'm keen to play this one. This one sounds fantastic. Does it play long?
Like about an hour and a half, an hour and 40. That's not long now, at all. But this is a game that if you have someone who is prone to AP and like analysis paralysis, it will kill their brain. Because the moment that someone decides that they even put a cube on the time space, because there's only one of them, right? So not multiple people can take it. And you don't want to take it because that's one of your 20 action cubes.
And a minus victory point.
And if you decide to actually do it, it's negative 1 point.
So it's going to benefit you to take it.
And there's not that many victory points to be had in the game.
It was like 14, 13, and I was on 8 or something like that. Yeah. It's very tight game. So you're like, one victory point was the difference between winning and losing this game. And so that's the thing, like, no one wants to go on that space. But the moment that someone goes on it, your mind goes into overdrive of like, oh, God, now I need to figure out, what if he does take it? Do I need, like... And it literally was one of those moments of, okay, like, is it a bluff? Is it not a bluff, right? You know, like, what are they doing? And
What's the player count?
It is from anywhere from... realistically, 3 through to 5, I believe you can play.
Okay.
I don't know what it would be like at 5, but I suppose
I think.
It would be really... Oh, no, it's only up to 4, I think, but it is...
Best at 4.
Yeah, yep. 3 to 5. And
interesting, it says the weight is 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I'd put it... give it there? It's not really a heavy game rules-wise. Yep. Where the complexity comes in is just the... strategy. It's the interaction players.
It sounds like a fantastic game. I can't wait to try it.
The most complicated bit's definitely the route building and the rules around where you can and can't place your sticks. Overlapping other players. Players, things like that. Yeah.
So that's right. Route blocking is a major thing in this game.
It gets quite intricate that way.
Yeah.
I love how you guys say it only takes like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Because like the only other splatter game I played is Food Chain, and that took us like 3.5 hours or something ridiculous for what that game is.
We didn't play that long.
Ours was 2 and 15. Yeah. 2 hours and 15.
I don't know what it was.
Granted, Damien just had this one turn and we were like, oh, that's the ramp you were talking about and how steep that ramp is. Yep. Okay. wipe the floor with us. But Damien, we actually will introduce him to the podcast because he's actually going to be making some guest appearances this year.
Yeah.
We've told him that we'd like to have him on, and he's asked, and so we will try and get him on and get him to explain. Look, he's always said to us as well, he's got a collection that he wants to play, and I said, well, let's do more of it. But anyway, that's Bust by the Splotter Boys. That was highly recommended.
No, definitely. I would recommend this game.
That's the thing. I've known Damon for quite a few years now, and we played a lot of games together. We barely touched his collection between us both as well. It's just insane. And I did something a little bit naughty with him over the break.
Oh, no.
We're already playing a 4-player game of Frosthaven.
Oh, no.
we're like really keen for it, so we bought our own copy. I don't know. I don't know how much other games we're going to get through for a while.
So hold up. Are you holding one at your house or does he have both of them in his house?
Another friend has the other one.
Okay.
We're playing a 4-player one because we beat Gloomhaven a few years back.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're all super psyched.
Very, very naughty.
Yep. I'm starting to feel that way a little bit myself with our one. I mean, we got Pandemic, we got King's Dilemma.
King's Dilemma is one I've had. I just never had the group to play it. Pandemic's fantastic.
Very, very short story. No spoilers for King's Dilemma, but we played two games in one night.
Oh, beautiful.
And We started.
That sounds like a nice, peaceful evening.
No, it was great, right? So what happened was we decided to start the game off the night with some cockroach poker, which we did. Lovely, fantastic. And I said, they wanted to play a game, and we said, let's play King's Dilemma, because this was the group that we'd been planning to play it with.
Awesome.
So we whip out the first game.
Oh, so you guys aren't like into the campaign. You just started.
No, we're two games in now. Wow. Right? So we're literally two games in. Yeah. So we play the first game, and it takes about an hour. And I had said to the boys, on average, I've heard the game takes about an hour to an hour and a half per playing session. And so we finished the first game.
Went by really quick.
At really quick, and we finished the first game at 9:30. And I said to the boys, do we want to go again? And they said, yeah, it's going to take, yeah, sure enough. We did not finish the second game. So we started, we kicked off at about 9:45. We did not finish the second game until 12:30. It just kept going. We did not draw.
Was that the discussion that was happening?
No,
it was just the amount of cards that we kept, because we kept drawing more for the campaign and more cards.
Yeah.
We never got to the king dying, and we never got to a point where one of them just went rampant. People were just keeping the discussion going. And
we needed someone to tank the team.
No one would happen, right? So because of that, it was just like, we got to 12:30, and I'm like, literally, I went, I'm just going to look at the next card, because I need to see whether or not this is actually the end game, because my wife was downstairs, and I'm like, I got into bed and I went, I'm so sorry. And she goes, I'm not talking to you right now. And I went, that's fair enough. And she was wake up in the morning and she goes, I'm so cranky. You want to go? I'm so sorry.
So you felt like a real counsel to the king. You know, you stay up late helping the king, yep, and you go home.
To be fair though, the story had gripped us. Like we were we are all in on that story the moment. And there's a lot of really fun stuff. But anyway, we're not going to talk about King's Dilemma, because we'll probably come back to that maybe as a spoiler cast towards the end. But we will probably we'll do that. But we're going to go, I'd like to talk about a couple of games next, really. So after we played Bust that one night, the next night we actually went to the MacArthur Board Gamers Meetup for December. Yeah, it was January, actually. It was January 6th. And I got to play a couple of games that I really wanted to have a quick chat about. The first one I got to play the follow-up to Flamme Rouge, which was Heat Pedal to the Metal. This is essentially a direct sequel. It is essentially a direct sequel to Flamme Rouge. Same designer, and it is, a lot of people are saying it's the better game. And it, I don't know. The jury's out for me at the moment. I will say how it plays very quickly, which is basically you have a hand of cards or a deck of cards. You can either play speed cards from 0 to 5. And we're basically playing 1920s Formula One races, right? So the engines are a bit crap. They could burst into fire. You know, you're pushing it to the limit.
So back when it was exciting to watch, I get you.
Yeah. Well, this season was pretty good, but yes, fair cop. But the way that the game plays, and so you pick up 4 cards and then you choose a gear from 1 to 4. 7 cards, and you choose a gear from 1 to 4, and that's how many cards you can play from your hand. Mm-hmm. And then you move that many spaces. So you could play a 5 and then a 4, and then you move 9 spaces. The wrinkle is each corner has what they call a speed check line, and you have to go through that speed check line at the maximum value that it says. So if it says this is a speed 7, you can only play a maximum of 7 speed going through that corner. If I were to go through it in speed 9, I'd have to take 2 engine heat. Heat is a card that can't be discarded from your hand. It just sits there clogging up stuff. You can only discard heat if you're in the gears 1 and 2. And there's a whole bunch of stuff where it's a 2-lap race, and you are trying to very much slipstream people as well, similar to Flamme Rouge. So you want to land directly behind someone or directly beside them to get a side slipstream. And that's kind of it. Like, there are 2 variants to this game. There is the beginner version, which I played, and there's a more advanced version, which the advanced version is you actually get to do some modifications to your car. You play over like 3 races, and you can actually modify it. So my car may be good in corners, yours may be good on a straight. I'm very good at getting heat out of my engine. I don't know. We didn't play it, but I've heard a lot of things about it. And I actually really enjoyed it. It felt really good. It was a really fun race game. I really felt like it was really tight. I nearly won. I ended up coming 5th, but that's because I risked it on the last turn, because I'm like, I've got to risk it here. And there are cards where it's like, hey, if you draw this card, you then just draw an extra card and then keep drawing until you draw a speed card. And I drew a speed card that was too big, and I spun out, and it just sent me screaming back into first gear, and the other guys went screaming in front of me, and that's kind of how the race went. But, you know, you took the risk, and I really did feel like this game really did bring that action of that, like, we were jostling for positions, trying to get in front.
And you, and you had some agency over your actions.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, you do. Okay, cool. So you have a lot of agency and kind of going, well, I have seven cards. I need to play three of them. I know I'm coming up to a turn that's a hairpin, so I can't go max more than speed three, which is really slow, considering you could play potentially three cards at speed five and get a 14 or 15 speed turn, right? Oh, so you're like, oh, God, it really sucks, but I'm going to shift down and play through. But then you have to remember that everyone else is doing the same thing too. Yeah. But what you the good thing about slipstreaming is slipstreaming doesn't actually add to your speed total. So if I'm if you end your turn, Blake, one square behind the speed check line, but I end my turn directly behind you, my slipstream will push me forward two spaces, and that doesn't count towards my speed check. So even if I did seven and I ended behind you, and I get a slipstream that pushes me two in front of it, my speed is still seven.
Yeah.
So it's like you're jostling for position, trying to time the moments you want to slipstream so you can outbreak them and all this kind of stuff. And there's a really lot of fun stuff. I don't know if I like it more than Flam Rouge, though. Flam Rouge is just so tight and so, like, it is so hyper-focused. The big thing, the big difference is that in Flam Rouge, you eventually discard your cards so you never play them again. So you're kind of timing when I'm getting to the end. Whereas in Heat, you're actually siphoning through your deck and then like a deck builder style, but you're not adding more deck cards into it.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones that you add in are these Engine Heat cards, and then you can take them out. So it's like, realistically, you shouldn't be ending the game with Engine Heat, though, like sitting on your player mat. If you've done that, you haven't probably pushed your car hard enough. But I really enjoyed it. I really did like it. I really do think if you like Flam Rouge, or those kind of like racing movement games, it's actually really, really fun. I just don't know if I like it more than Flam Rouge as at its basic game. Maybe if I tried it at its advanced, I'd may like it for a different play style. But currently, as it stands, I don't know. The jury's still out on whether or not I like it or more. It is really relatively expensive. I think it's like $110.
And it just came out as well. Yeah, like a lot of people like go onto the hype train of these sort of newer games, even though the older ones are probably the better game. But like, you got to see where they stand in history. Like in a year or two from now, will people still be talking about Heat, or will people say, Flam Rouge is the better game?
And how many does it play?
Six. Well, we played six. I think it can play more. Starting grid does have eight on there, so you could play eight players. In saying that,
I don't know if I would, because
it's not simultaneous turns. Like in Flam Rouge, you all pick a card, you all reveal, and then we all go bam reveal. Yeah. Whereas in this, we all take our turn simultaneously, and we pick what we're going to do, and then we all play it, and then we reveal one at a time. But my turn is not just I'm playing a five, move my dude five. It's I'm playing a five and a four plus a wild card. Then I have to take an engine heat because I went too far. It's just, it slows it down just a little. I actually really enjoyed it at six. Like when you have someone keeping everyone on top of it, even at six players, you feel like you are really tight and feels like there's a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a bit of action going on.
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah.
That said, again, I only played the basic rule set. Now, at a basic rule set, I would rather play Flam Rouge just because that for me is just so tight. I really enjoy the slipstreaming and like having a breakaway pack and all that kind of stuff. I really enjoyed that.
I know you're really into Formula One, but was it the theme?
No, I really liked the theme. I think it actually worked really well because it felt like a rickety old car. Like when I pushed it really hard and had to take three heat out of my five heat that I had sitting there, you're like, I'm pushing my engine really freaking hard right now. That's fine.
Yeah, that's a cool thing.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. The actual theme worked out really well. Each player board has like little custom things like, you know, drawings and artworks of like people of like you're in the cockpit. So it actually worked out pretty well. The theme was no issues at all. It's just, I don't know, just... I really went into it, and I think I was caught up a little bit in the hype train, and I really tried to sit back on and go, everyone is saying this is better than Flam Rouge, and that is one of my top 10 gateway games of all time, even though I didn't make my list. But, you know, one of my top 10 bigger box games, right? Oh, it is, man. Like, if I had to get, like, a big box game...
It's on a top 10 somewhere. That's the point I'm trying to make.
No, but, like, it's, like, one of those games, like, a bigger box game, right? Yeah. One of those, like, it's intimidating for new players because of how big the box is, but... When I look at it, I'm like, I really kind of just I don't know, and I try to not get sucked into that hype. And
yeah.
I think that also partially is what's going on here. I think I'm very tempered, like, ugh, I don't want to give in to the hype. I don't know.
But
I actually don't know. Like, I'm actually like, I don't want to jump in and go, yes, this is great. Even though I'm like saying, it was a solid 7 out of 5 in my first time.
It does sound, the more advanced rules do sound like fun.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played, but just the fact that you've got this rickety old car, having a bit of customization to it, like you feel like you've almost built this rickety old car. Like, you know, you've designed it how you like to play, depending on how far that customization goes. But that sounds like it could be a bit of fun.
In Formula D advanced rules, you can take out your car radio and throw it at the car next to you. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Look, I would rate it. If I'm being honest, I'd rate it better than Formula D. That's how good I thought the game was.
I watched a playthrough of this game. It looks pretty good, but I'm like, Drift is amazing. Like, I want to play Drift for real. Drift has like really ruined every racing game for me now.
Well, and that's the thing, which is that this is a completely different style of game. This is kind of like a deck builder, but without the deck building, if that makes sense. It's kind of like it's like deck management. Like, because I know that I have 3 threes in my deck, and I've played 2 of them, and I've only got 3 cards left to draw. So one of those is most likely a 3, but what are the other 2? I don't know. You got to try and figure out. So you can actually try and do some really funky stuff there with like planning. But I would like to play this again. I want to give it a couple of other goes
for sure.
Rob, who is one of the guys in the group who introduced this game, he was raving about it, and I can see why. I think it really works out really
well. I had some discussions with Rob about a couple of the games he likes, and I tell you what, I do trust his decisions, and we do have respectful arguments about which is our favorite games. But like, yeah, he's a top guy.
Oh, I love top Rob guy. He's great. He bought one of the games I really want to try, which is War Room, and it's like basically like looks like Diplomacy on steroids, and I'm like,
I still haven't played Diplomacy. I was thinking about that this week, and I was like,
I love that game. Yeah, so that one's still on my list. I love Diplomacy. I love and I hate it, but I love it and I hate it. But speaking of games that I loved, I'd like to just transfer to a game that I played one quick game of as well at this meetup, which is Ready, Set, Bet. And this is by John DeClair of Dead Reckoning and Massive Darkness, I believe other one was.
And the Chocolate Eclair as well.
And the Chocolate Eclair, yes, of course. Oh gosh, we're one episode in the new season. It was bound to happen. But this game is literally Ready, Set, Bet is a really simple, very easy party game. It is literally a horse race, and we're just betting on a horse race. The game literally is just there are horses that are labeled on the dice from 7, you know, like 2 and 3 is 1. Then you have a horse on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then 11 and 12 is another horse. And then we roll 2 dice, and depending on what number comes up, we move that horse up the racetrack. And then eventually, at some point, one horse is going to get to the win. So, for example, you like Can't Stop. This game is essentially automated Can't Stop, and now we're just going to bet on which ones we think are going to get to the end, right? So, obviously, 7 has the most amount of odds to get there. So, I can put my bets down. So, there's a big green board in front of us that basically has the betting odds. So I can say, I think that the 7 horse is going to win, and it's a x4. There's only 1 x4 slot. And so whoever puts their bet down first gets those odds.
Mm.
And then, well, the next one you could put down as a x3, and then there's a x2 and a couple of x2s. So the first in best dress, but you only have limited coins that you can actually chuck down. So I've got a 3, a 2, a 1, a 2, and 2 1 coins, right? So then I start the game, and I'm like, okay. And I'm literally just watching it going. Now, I should mention this game comes with an app that you can put onto your phone /iPad/TV. What's that?
Do you want to play something for us?
Oh, I'm not going to. No? I won't do it at the moment. But
maybe it's an outro to the episode.
Yeah, maybe at the moment. But essentially, it's just like there's a commentator, and the commentator is literally going, 7, right? They roll the dice and he goes, 7, moving up the field. 4, gets off the starting line. 4, gets his bonus movement, which they horses have bonus movement, of course. So if I roll 2 4s in a row, not only does he move his 1 space, he moves an extra 2 spaces on top because you get that bonus movement, boys. And that's literally the whole game. The game is literally just a whole bunch of, I'm watching this horse race unfold in front of me, and then I'm going to just, at some point, the red flag gets dropped and everyone just starts slamming down bets. Because you don't want to start slamming down bets at the start. Because you're like, eight's getting ahead. Wait. All right, he's hit the magic threshold that everyone was waiting for and everyone starts slamming bets down on number eight to win the race.
I was just trying to think, they could retheme this game as well. It can be like the share market and everyone's buying shares as the price is going up or down and absolutely. Things like that.
Yeah, they absolutely could. And so what's really cool is so you have to stop betting when three horses pass the no bet line or the bet line, and then one horse wins and we pay out. Now there is some fun little variation. So there's the prop bet market. So four bets come out at the start of every race, which is like, I think that the eight will beat every single yellow. So the eight and six are blue horses, and then the ones above that are yellow. So you think, I think eight is going to beat every single yellow, but only one person can have that prop bet. And then the game plays over four rounds. So at the beginning of every round, from round two, a special little rule comes out. Like, ooh, in this round, everyone may bet such and such, or this particular bet happens. And then you also get given a random power at the beginning of every round too. It's like, now, well, Blake, you got the extra bet token, so you now have an extra bet on top of everyone. Or Ralph, your first bet will not get negative points if it doesn't come up.
Cool.
Or Anthony, congratulations, you just got the bet token, which means that for one of your bets, you can bet where someone else was no matter when. So you can hold on to that right at the end and go, seven's about to win. I don't care. Slam it on the seven win marker. And it played in 25 minutes, four races done and dusted. And I literally sat there going, that is the epitome of the GoobaCon game. It plays up to 10 players, plays simultaneously. You put it on the TV, let it come through your speaker. Everyone stands around the game board. No one's sitting and everyone's yelling at each other. And I'm like, that's it. I think this is one of my... I can already tell this is going to be one of my top 10 games of 2023. I'm already calling it now.
See, I would be absolutely terrible at this game because there's no way I'm waiting for that magic moment where the horse... No, I'm... All in on number five, straight up.
100%.
I will admit, in race number one, I did that with number four. I went, number four is going to win two chip, bang, on the first slot. Didn't win by a long shot, right? And then in round number two, exactly what I said happened, which was that everyone's a bit more cautious. Now I'm going to wait. And just watching the horses, number eight starts to get a lead. And then all of a sudden, number eight gets bonus movement. As soon as he got that bonus movement, we all just started slamming on eight. Like, who's going to get it?
This sounds really fun.
It was honestly one of those moments where I went, I am so glad I played it. And I asked James to bring it to the meet specifically because he kickstarted it. Oh. And I did not back it. I pulled out of the backing because I'm like, I already have a John Declare game. I know because I had long shot the dice game. I'm like, I already have a horse racing game. It's completely different. And I regret not backing it. I regret.
That's what I was going to ask you. How does it hold up to long? Because I love long shot.
Long shot's fantastic.
It's a completely different game. Like long shot, I would say, is a roll and write mixed with a bit of madness. Mm-hmm. This is just pure betting madness, right? If you like having a gamble at the races or anything like that, this will certainly suit you. It's that sort of game. If you just want to have a bit of fun, you like it. Like it's stupid, right? There's no, I don't control my luck here. Mm-hmm. It's just complete bullcrap.
So I just had a bit of a blast from the past here. I think it was like my Bucks party, like ages ago. And what you do, we had like four kings just on the table.
I played this game.
And like you shuffle the rest of the deck and you flip a card and say it was the diamond. You move the diamond king up one card space. Yep. And you keep flipping cards. Yep. It's a bit of a race and you're all betting as to which one's going to win. So it feels like it's much more improved.
It's essentially that game. Yeah. It is essentially that game. I've done it before.
Yeah,
so.
Something like that. Yeah.
Look, if you get a chance to play Ready, it's only about to hit the shelves in Australia now. I believe the Kickstarter has now been fulfilled, so now it's actually finally hitting the shelves. And I really want to buy this game. Like, I know I kind of said, I'm not going to buy that many more games this year. And I'm like, this was really freaking
It's like it's early January.
It was so good. I really want to play it. So anyway, but that was Ready, Set, Bet by John Declare. Highly recommended. I've only played one game, but I knew as soon as the first round of the four were done, I was like, I'm going to buy this game. I knew it immediately.
Yeah.
Anyway, so speaking of games, we're going to continue on though. That's mine. Like Ralph, we'd like to hear about yours, sir.
Yeah, so over the break, I did something pretty cool, which you fellas already know, but I went to Adelaide just to meet a friend, and we went to the Lost Dice Board Game Cafe down there. which is actually really cool. So we met the owner there. So highly recommend it if anyone's in Adelaide to go spend an afternoon there. He's got quite a large collection, quite a variety of games that you can go play. And I think it was just so cool that we got to play Seven Wonders Duel and Flem Rouge and order dessert and lunch. And I taught my wife Flem Rouge and she loved it. So I definitely need to grab a copy of that at some point. Yeah, my wife likes it. That's all that I need. I need to buy it now. So that was a really good time. We just played a bunch of new games while we were down there. So that was really cool.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. Love it. You spoke about Seven Wonders Duel there for a moment. I just like to point out I'm currently playing in the Australian Board Game Geeks Group Seven Wonders Duel Tournament, and I'm currently 2-0.
Do they play with the expansion in it? Or
they are playing with the Pantheon expansion.
So I've never learned that. You've got to teach me sometime.
Yeah, Pantheon's pretty good, but I'm currently 2-0, and I think there's 9 games in the Swiss format I think we're playing. So
Ooh.
As my first 2 games have been against players, and now I think I'm getting to the pointy end where I'm starting to get against players who are actually like...
Yeah, you start sweating each move. Oh no. He took the clay. Should I take the stone?
Well, wherever you finish, Nee, I'd just like to say I've beaten you at this game. So
you have, and that's why I'm kind of like, but it's like I'm going into this going with like, this is one of those games that I've played the most at like a sweaty level. If I take that, I shouldn't take that, but if I take this, I could, like, planning out moves. And this is one of those ones where I'm kind of like, oh, I really actually kind of want to do well at this. Like, George's like, why are you stressing so much? I'm like, because I want to win this one. Like, not win the tournament, but I want to see how well I can do. So I think it's about 50 of us in the tournament at the moment, or 50 or 60, I think.
Okay.
So, look, if I can place in the top 20, I'll count that as a win, but realistically, I'm aiming top 10.
Actually, that's what I did on the break. I just played a lot of BGA, entering tournaments every day.
We're currently playing a game of Great Western Trail.
I actually stuffed up by entering tournaments. I think I clicked to enter a space-based one, but I thought I clicked it once.
Oh, no.
I entered into 10 games of space-based one day, like, and I was like, holy shit. I'm like, do I have to finish these? Like, oh, so I did. Man, that was a stressful time. So you get a trophy playing 10 games at once, and I was like, oh no.
Did you win any of those 10 games?
I've won one of them.
That's impressive.
1 out of 10. At least you got one.
Yeah, I know. 1 out of 10. That's still a top 10, right?
Yeah. Still a top 10. That's absolutely right.
I'll pay that.
All right, Ralph. Let's have a chat about our gateway game of the week, which this week is a game that you brought to us, which is called Kites, Time to Fly.
Yeah, so I love flying a kite. Don't like Mary Poppins, but I love flying a kite.
Wow.
I know. I'm a weird individual, aren't I?
Wow.
But, that's okay. Please don't sing the song.
Go fly. I'll stop now.
So Kites is a 2-5 player game where you have a bunch of sand timers that are in the middle of the table. They start lying down, and when the game starts, one of them is your main timer. So the white one is your main timer, and all the other colors represent kites. And when one of your players play a card, say it's the red one, they will grab the red timer and flip it. So now it's activated, that kite is in the air, and it goes to the next player, and if they play the red card, they will flip that timer again. And it's a co-op game with this 5 different colors, and if one of those 6 timers run out, we lose. That is essentially the game. You're trying to constantly play cards in a circle, draw more cards, and keep those timers alive.
Very simple, and people may be going, okay, where's the game?
Yeah, so all the timers are different length as well.
Exactly, and that's the game right there, which is the red card. The red timer is like on 20 seconds or 15 seconds, and that doesn't sound like a long time, and you're right, it isn't, because you'll be like, all right, I'm going to play the purple. Oh, my God, the red timer's low, and Ralph goes, I don't have any red cards, and Blake goes, neither do I, and I'm like, well, play your cards, hurry up, because I've got a red card, get it back, and we played 2 games of this. We lost the first game.
Yeah, what I love is, like, someone flips the yellow timer because it was in dire straits, and then I immediately need to flip the purple timer, but the only purple card I have also flips the yellow, so it's like, we're still in trouble!
Someone's going to flip that yellow timer again. And this is such a really cool concept, because it is that simple. It's literally 6 sand timers, play card, flip a card timer.
Yeah.
That's it. Literally the whole game. And Ralph, you said that someone mentioned that they had a good they had a good option, like if you want to introduce this to new kids as well.
Yeah, so we played it. Admittedly, all the kids in my life were a little bit older. I think the youngest was 8 years old that we played this with. But he loved it. Played it with my nieces and nephews, and everyone likes it. It's just a very quick game. You can play it within 5 minutes, you've done a round.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very quick. It plays well at all the player counts I have, and I know it only plays to 5. But I've played it at 7, and I just gave
someone called the board game police.
Yeah, it hurt me, but you just play with less cards in your hand, right. And it still means you don't have a lot of time to make your decision. But you play quick to pass it to the next player that can hopefully keep the game alive.
Okay,
yeah, so it plays well at all the player counts, every age bracket that I've played it as well.
Yeah, I suppose though as well, if you're introducing this to little kids as well, you could just remove a color, like you could just like remove like red and.
Yeah, it tells you which ones to remove, actually. Like, if it's your first game, take out a two colors and you remove all those cards as well from the game.
Okay.
Yeah. It also gives you a bit of a... you can do a score as well, like how long it takes for the last timer to run out, and you can be like, how well you did. But really, you lost.
Okay. Yeah, look, I... look, on first play, I kind of went... Well, this is a very, very good gateway game. There's not a lot here, but there's the perfect amount here for what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important thing, which is that it's just a game to get people around the table. It's very colorful.
A very pretty game.
Very, very, very pretty. But Blake, what did you think after we played a couple of times?
No, I only had one word when it finished, and that's just chaos. It was just utter chaos that first game, going into it with, you know, because it's so simple, the teach seems so simple, so you go, okay, well, I've got this, you know.
Yeah, we can do this.
How hard can this be? And all of a sudden, timers start flipping, and you start looking, all of a sudden, you're colorblind, and you you can't read colors anymore, you forget to, I'm forgetting to draw cards, like, under the time pressure. And the thing that seems simple... But it didn't immediately click, obviously. When you flip the yellow timer, and if I flip it back, it's not reset, you know. No. It's only got the 5 seconds that it was flipped for on it. But it didn't immediately click until I did it and realized, oh shit.
Yeah, and
I've just given Nia a 5 second yellow timer. He better have a yellow card.
What I like about it as well, it clicked for you in the second game. I think you said to me, if we just don't activate a certain color, it stays down. We could just do that. And I'm like, yeah, you can, but at some point.
And speaking of activating it, though, we did in the second game, we actually played with the three. There are actually three little advanced rules that you can play with, Ralph. So why don't you take us through what those
three cards are. So there's three different types, and there's four copies of these cards each. So you can make the game as complex as you want or as funny as you want as well if you're into it. So the first one is the storm card. So when you draw this card into your hand, you just say to everyone, a storm is coming. And then on your next turn, you have to play the storm card and you have to flip every single timer. Now, that's
so scary.
It sounds really scary, and it can be, because you can methodically plan your moves and things like that. But if a storm's coming, it just turns the chaos upside down. So if you add four of those into the deck, it's utter chaos as someone's trying to flip all six timers in front of you. And you're like, what timer do I need to look at now? So that's pretty fun. The cross lines is awesome. It's very thematic, as if we'll find those kites and our kites got twisted and we have to unravel them. Because when you get the cross lines card, I think on your next turn you have to play it, and then you swap a card to your left and to your right. But everyone does this, so you're also getting a card to your from your left and from your right.
I misunderstood that rule until we got in the game and you both threw cards at me. I'm like, oh crap, do I have to throw cards at you? Yeah, but I'm like, oh no, I totally didn't realize
all our lines are tangled when that one happens. And the last one, because you can communicate in this game, you can talk, you can say, oh, the red timer's running low, can you deal with it, that sort of thing. The last one is the aeroplane. And when that happens, on your next turn, you have to play it, and you say aeroplane, and a plane is flying over you, and you can't talk because the plane's too loud. But
sucks. It sucks so badly.
So the last game I played with this with the family, we put four of the aeroplanes in the deck as well as some other abilities. And whenever the aeroplane came out, we house ruled it of you have to sing the aeroplane jelly song. The I love aeroplane jelly. So like we did that for a full round until it gets to your next
turn.
That
wouldn't have been annoying at all. So,
look, it added to the chaos, that's for sure. But what was so funny, we got through... I'd say 70% of the deck without one aeroplane.
Oh, no.
And then it went from I like air, it was just chaos because we all had to sing and we all had to restart that song.
It's not supposed to be done in a round.
But yeah, we had and still have had a lot of fun with this game.
Cards. How expensive is the game? Not that expensive.
I can't remember.
Probably be about 35 bucks probably.
This was one of those games. What's that big convention in America that they had?
PAX, where there's a few of them, like PAX Unplugged. Is that the one?
No, that's Melbourne.
The one in Indianapolis? Yeah, Gen Con.
Gen Con. So this was a huge hit over there. Right. And I heard of that, I think it was around October, and immediately pre-ordered it.
Okay.
So I actually can't remember what it cost.
I think it's around about that $35 to $40.
Yeah, which, I'd say so.
But like you're paying for the sand timers and stuff like that. But the game itself is so simple, so easy to understand. It literally takes less than 2 minutes to explain the game and then you go.
And by removing these timers, Nate, I think you can even like teach your daughter how to play this pretty easily.
She's about to turn 6, so I realistically could just take out the red and take out an orange and just leave them with 3 timers to start with and we go, let's see.
Oh.
And I force her how to do it. I think that could be really good. I really enjoyed it. Look, that's the thing about doing a board game podcast, because we play so many games now and we play so many larger games as well. It is nice to reset and find these smaller games.
Definitely.
And go, this game is not pretending to be anything else other than it's not some five minute chaos that we whip out, very easy to teach, and you could literally put it, like the box does it a disservice for how much space it actually requires. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require that much space at all. And you literally just go, deck of cards, start flipping. I really enjoy it.
So there is another rule that I didn't explain, actually. The white timer, which is the longest timer, it's a minute. That is essentially your game clock. There's certain cards that allow you to flip this timer. However, when the last card in the deck has been drawn, and it's just the white, like all the timers are gone, you just got to play your cards, you can no longer flip the white timer. So there's a bit of strategy as to when the last player flips this timer, because you have to, every player has to play all their cards in turn order and keep every timer alive.
Yeah.
So this just makes the last round, the last conclusion absolutely amazing. And if you guys can beat it, everyone just sits back and looks at the sand timers as if we did something cool, you know?
We did that. We all just went, whoo, hell yeah, we did it. Anyway, yeah. So that was Kites, Time to Fly. I really enjoyed it. What did you guys, final thoughts on it before we start to round out this podcast?
Yeah, no, I loved it. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It doesn't pretend to be anything but what it is. It's simple, it's quick, easy to play, and it's just a whole lot of laughs.
Look, it won't be entering my top 10 or top 20, but in saying that, I've had a lot of fun with it, and I would still recommend people get it, play it, check it out, because it is a lot of fun. It's probably not a game I keep forever, but it's pretty good.
I think that's...
It's more of an activity than...
That's what I think. Like, I look at this, this is a little bit of a fun novelty. This is when you get out to say, hey, look at this cool thing. And I think the next step up from this is you're starting to look at the, the Kitchen Rush sort of ones where it's like...
I really want to play that too.
Mm. Okay, so that was our podcast, our return to form.
I think we found our form.
I think so. Yeah. I never thought we lost our form. I think we're pretty good.
Well, you know, I think we made an improvement with Matt not being here, so.
Ooh. Yeah, take that. That's what you get for leaving us. He knows we're telling the truth. Oh, no, that's too
mean. He knows us.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoyed listening to the podcast tonight, please go ahead and go follow us on all of our social medias. Go to our website, which is www.boardgamegateway.com. There we are going to be having all of our links to Discord, to Facebook, to all the fun stuff. I wouldn't mind you guys doing all this to my stuff if you didn't bonk the mic in the middle of it. if you want to see what I'm talking about, go to our YouTube channel and see the boys try to stack the six timers on top of each other
before they run out.
Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you in episode 23 of the Board Game Gateway podcast. Until then, my name is Neva. Thank you, Ralph, and thank you, Blake, for joining me. We'll see you guys next time. Bye bye.
See you later.
See ya.
Seriously, it's your house of cards all over you.
You can't put something in front of me.
You should have learned from the car building. Come on.
I was just watching, I saw this one go up and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that.
There we go. All right, so I'll see.